Well, another tough loss for us to digest here on Jays Talk. This one, perhaps, especially tough because Alek Manoah largely pitched very well, which we haven't seen in quite some time. But Carlos Santana does the thing against the Jays once again. 5-1, the Jays lose to the Twins. They lose the series ahead of a tough trip to Camden Yards, which starts tomorrow in Baltimore. Show Ali with you. Like I said, this is Jays Talk live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We're also streaming on Sportsnet.ca and the Sportsnet app. Give us a call, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, star 590 on your cell. Text me as well, 590-590, name and location, the people's text line always open. Maybe you're on your way home to get ready for Mother's Day festivities. Happy Mother's Day to everyone out there. Maybe you're here at the stadium. Maybe you're waiting in line to watch your kids run the bases. It's a Junior Jays Sunday here. Whatever you like, you can text me, 590-590, name and location. Again, the phone number is to call 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, star 590 on your cell. The power outage from the offense, just two hits, one run today, is something we'll get to. But for me, Manoah is where I wanted to begin today. Seven innings for Manoah, four hits, three runs, none of them earned. One walk and six strikeouts gives up the home run to Carlos Santana, unfortunately, effectively to lose the game. But you know what? Whenever Manoah's on the mound, good or bad, he is the story, right? Like, he, for better or for worse, he's the story. Dealing, getting smoked, he's the story. And you guys know this because I think most people felt this way, but when Manoah was called up to play the Nationals, I guess it was last weekend, I wasn't a huge fan of the move because for me, and I think a lot of you would agree, you wanted him to force the issue, right? You wanted him to force the issue by dominating AAA to the point that he couldn't stay down there any longer. But an injury to Yariel Rodriguez obviously is what ultimately forced things. And he goes out there, gives up six earned runs in Washington. I think we all kind of collectively continue to wonder what's the kind of stuff he has. And today, I got to say, I loved seeing confident Alek Manoah. I think that's a big part of certainly not only his appeal, but almost like, because we talk about like mentality of athletes and how these guys basically have to believe, truly believe, that they are the baddest you-know-whats on the face of the planet in order to play well, essentially. And maybe not every athlete's like that, but I think a lot of them are. And I get the sense that Alek Manoah is very much like that. So for him to go out there and look confident in his delivery, there were some spotty parts here and there. Don't get me wrong, it wasn't perfect, but I think that's big for him, right? I had said pregame, Julia was on with me pregame. She's busy in the locker rooms right now, grabbing sound and writing some words for MLB.com. But I had said with her pregame that what I would take from Manoah, kind of like a moral victory, and maybe that's what we're doing now, now anyways, but I would take five innings, let's say 3 to 4 runs given up based on everything we had seen in the last year plus. Like, right, for like most of you guys, I was looking for consistency. It was less about high heat and overall velo and more, could he locate those pitches, right? Last time out against the Nationals, he walked four batters. And early on in this game, I had some concern because the command of that fastball in particular, gosh, it was all over the place. I think it was Willy Castro. He walked on four pitches. And I think each of those four pitches were like in each different corner of the zone, but just outside of the zone effectively. But he settled down, right? He was firing strikes, and that was the main positive. He actually threw strikes. And it sounds so simple and so obvious and kind of dumb to say, but that had been a huge negative for him. He was not locating in the past starts, even in those minor league starts. There were some starts where he's hitting guys, he's walking guys, and he just could not locate the zone. And going back to last year, one thing I've noticed about Manoah is when guys get on base, and I think a lot of pitchers do this, but maybe it's just because we're like hyper-focused on what Manoah is doing on the mound, he speeds up his delivery. Like almost like he gets anxious and thinking about the guy standing on first base. But today, I thought he got ahead of most batters. And I kind of felt, kind of in the middle of that outing, a really big moment for him today was following the Ernie Clement error, right? Runner on first, nobody out. Doesn't seem to get too bothered or rattled. He induces another soft roller right to Clement. who starts that double play, and he was jacked up, like screaming at Clement, Clement pointing at him. And I honestly think that might have been like a turning point mentally for him, that he could kind of get out of that. And it was not, wasn't the only point. He walked guys. I think each of the first three innings, runners were on base with nobody out. The first runner or first batter of the inning got aboard in some way, shape, or form. Obviously, on the other half of that, a second Ernie Clement error that allowed Max Kepler to get aboard, followed by a Willy Castro single, runners on second and first and second. And I was curious to see how he'd respond with attacking batters. And he had done that all day long. He did not throw a single fastball to either Alex Kirilov or Carlos Santana. But Santana putting the Jays in the and their fans certainly in the torture chamber yet again. It's almost like it's almost a little too on the nose, honestly. All right, let's check the text line. And the phones, 590-590, name and location. And 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590. I almost forgot what the phone numbers were, even though I've said them a million times. Star 590 on your cell. Let's go to the phones first, and we'll go back to the people's text line. Let's see here. Russ in New Jersey calling here on Jay's Talk. Russ, what's on your mind? What did you think of Manoah's star, Russ?
I thought he was unbelievable. If you think about it, I think he was only 2-0 on two hitters. And that was the guy that he walked on four pitches, and Carlos Santana. He fell behind 2-0, gave up a home run. He had like 55 pitches in like the sixth inning, you know, with the cover. The guy was good. He didn't let the first error bother him. Obviously, you don't want to give up the homer, and you know, but with the Blue Jays offense, you know, three runs might do the trick on most nights. So, you know, I thought he pitched very well, like you said. I thought he was fired up. You know, like they said on the broadcast, you know, Clement made the error. He motioned him, don't worry about it, we'll get him. But again, another day that the offense does nothing. And this team last year was 24-16. They're 18-22 and going to Baltimore. You know, you've lost six series. You haven't won, I shouldn't say, in six series in a row because you split the Philly series, and the other five you've lost. Last year, the most you lost in a row was three. So, you know, I don't know. After Baltimore gets a little easier with Detroit and the White Sox a couple times, but I just, if the offense is not going to hit, it's, you know, I don't care who's pitching out there. If it's, you know, Sandy Koufax, it's not going to make a difference. You got to score runs, and they just can't do it.
Yeah, hey, Russ, thanks for the call, man. I agree with you. I mean, the schedule, I actually wouldn't look past a lot of the schedule for the rest of May. Certainly the White Sox. Like, the six games against the White Sox, there was a three-game set. I guess it's not this coming, like, not tomorrow, but next Monday. Three-game set against the White Sox here at the Rogers Center. And then the following Monday, the 27th, another three-game set against the White Sox on the south side of Chicago. But, you know, you certainly can't look past any team. But, I mean, outside of that, I mean, Russ mentioned it. Three games against the Baltimore Orioles, three games here against the Rays. And then, you know what? The Tigers, four games set against the Tigers. Tigers, I think they got off to a hotter start than we expected, but they're not pushovers, right? I think there's a good chance that Tarek Skubal is going to be pitching in that. He might win the American League Cy Young this year. So, I don't know. It's not an easy schedule. Through to the end of May, certainly got to talk about the offense, to Russ's point, right? And I think talking about the batting order decisions as well, I mean, the guys only mustered two hits and one run today, and on a day after you get 10 runs and 16 hits from the offense yesterday, Danny Jansen coming into the game in the seventh inning to pinch hit for Vogelbach, Davis Schneider batting fifth instead of leadoff, where George Springer struck out twice, and I mean, Schneider also struck out twice, but I've said this before, but on Jano, pinch hitting has got to be one of the hardest things to do in baseball. Like, you're sitting there cold the whole game, then you're suddenly asked to deliver in a critical moment. And, I mean, Jano still gave the ball a ride to drive in a run with the sac fly. But, I mean, should he not have just been in the lineup to begin with? Like, I get that if the thought process is to play him every game in Baltimore, and, I mean, you think he should, right? Then he'd play 6 days in a row if he had played today. I mean, he did play today, but if he had started today, I suppose. But you could have just DH'd him. Like, if we knew, and you kind of did know this, that Kirk and the whole personal catchers thing, Kirk was going to catch for Manoah, and it largely seemed to work out for Manoah, there was no reason you couldn't have just DH'd Danny Jansen, right? Like, again, I understand you want to be giving guys rest days, but, I mean, come on. The team had two hits today. The guy could have played. He has an OPS of over 1,000, and he sat. It's just not the greatest of looks. Obviously, like, would Danny Jansen playing the entire game been the reason they win instead of losing 5-1? Maybe not. Maybe not. Like, you need certainly more from, well, everyone. You need more from George Springer. You need more from Kirk, obviously. You did need more from some of the other guys who had largely played well, like IKF and Ernie Clement and so on. But, I mean, the game, like, you're never going to talk about them losing the game because Ernie Clement and IKF didn't hit enough. That's just that's never going to be the case, nor should it be the case, right? You're going to always talk about the performance of the top guys. But, yeah, the offense not getting it done once again. I wanted to read a couple of these texts. There were a bunch of these. Kimmy T and Brace Bridge, it's funny. No more needs to be said. Cancel these post-game shows. Come back once the team is worth watching. It's over. It's not early anymore. I mean, it's not early anymore, but, I mean, Kimmy, I get paid by the hour, so I kind of need them to do these post-game shows. Blair and Barker, not so much. If the guys want me to do more because they don't want to watch as much, you know what? Who am I to argue? I see a couple of texts here. Let me just find them here. About the batting order, and I thought it was really interesting. A lot of the texts about Vogelbach, and this is from Tony in Kitchener. What has Springer done to deserve going up to the top again? Why can't Schneider just lead the lineup? Well, or why can't John Schneider just leave the lineup like it was? Also, Vogelbach needs to be DFA'd. He has no use. We could use some power from Aurelvis Martinez down in AAA. And there are some other ones about Vogelbach as well. Yeah, I see Scott in Burlington. Springer hitting the cover ball off the cover off the ball today would be a waste of good hitting to put him in the ninth spot. Springer probably should not be hitting leadoff. I can agree with you guys with that. But the Vogelbach's role I find really interesting, right? Like, he barely plays as it is. But then in big situations, if he is coming up to the plate, on the rare times he does play, he's getting lifted as the DH. And when it comes to Danny Jansen being the guy he's being lifted for, I think that definitely speaks to simply how well Danny Jansen has been swinging the bat. But at the same time, you got to think that it also speaks to Vogelbach not being the bat you want in that scenario, right? So if that's the case, like, what is his actual role? Aurelvis Martinez, by the way, apropos of nothing, hit his 10th home run of the season for the Bisons today. But, you know, as much as I'd like to see Aurelvis play, if he's not going to play every single day, and it's a hard situation to sort because of the positional logjam, right? He basically will only play second. And you already have, like, Schneider, Biggio, Clement, and IKF who are already in that logjam. And so if you're not going to play Aurelvis every day, I don't really see the point in bringing him up only to play once every 3 days when he could be getting reps in the minors. Maybe that also speaks to, maybe you should just clear up a roster spot and trade one of those guys to make Aurelvis play. His defense hasn't been great, obviously. They want him to work on that. He's committed a lot of errors in the minors, so obviously I think that's a big reason why he hasn't been called up. But at the same time, like, if it's not Aurelvis Martinez, in theory could that roster spot not be better used by literally anyone else? Like, Spencer Horwitz is a popular name I see. Jen in Toronto often brings that up. And I see Jen's text. I appreciate it, Jen. He's a little bit older, right? Kind of one of those, like, quad A type players. He could take that role that Vogelbach is using and is cheaper. Even if you didn't want to bring Horwitz up, Nathan Lucas would give you a different look in the sense of being a defensive replacement or a pinch runner, which the Jays have had issues with, right, in big spots. Addison Barger, he struggled when he came up, but we've already seen him, and he was swinging the bat. If it wasn't resulting in a lot of actual hits or runs, I think maybe you'd probably prefer to see him. I don't know. There are options in the minors for the Jays to go with, and obviously Joey Votto is a big question mark, but I don't know. I'm not convinced Joey Votto is real at this point. It must have been a really bad sprained ankle, because, like, I mean, we saw him hit the home run in spring training. That was almost like, what, like 2.5 months ago? 3 months ago? Whenever that was? Man. I'm not sure what Joey Votto is. It does somewhat feel like it'll be like Vladimir Guerrero Sr., I suppose, now, when he suited up for the Jays in the spring and then never actually played for them. I hope he does play, because I think that'd be fun. But anyways, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, star 590 on your cell. Let's go back to the phones. Earl and Beaton calling in on Jays Talk. Earl, what's on your mind?
What's on my mind is I'm not happy with John Schneider as a manager, and I'm going to give you a couple examples why.
Sure.
In game one, when the Blue Jays ended up having two runs, he didn't walk Santana. He had a 2-0 count on him. And instead of putting him on base and facing somebody like today, Vasquez, he did the same thing today. He did the same damn thing. It was a 2-0 count. Put him on base. Pitched to Vasquez, who's not hitting very well. But he let him, and he hit a 3-run homer. I mean, something's got to change. He's not a very good manager. I'm sorry. It's just, it's unbelievable the number of games he has cost the Blue Jays. I'm not saying the Blue Jays would have won, but I'm saying that it was better to walk Santana with a 2-0 count.
And a base open, too.
And base plays Vasquez.
Yeah, hey, Earl, I appreciate the call, man. Thanks for calling in. I don't actually disagree, honestly. Like, you look at the three pitches Santana saw, and none of them were in the zone, right? So it's not like Manoah was throwing meatballs down the middle. All of them were away out of the zone from Santana, he's a switch hitter, but he was batting left, obviously. But like, to Earl's point, and to many of your points on the text line, at the same time, I am surprised we didn't see four fingers flash from John Schneider to give Santana the old Shohei treatment, right? Intentionally walk him. And again, like, if Christian Vasquez is the one who beats you, then you live with that. Like, he beats you and you live with that, right? But, I mean, I think the reason, too, for me, it's not only because, you know, you want to be as careful as humanly possible, but also because of the person specifically. Right, and again, I bring up like Shohei Ohtani, and like you know, he's probably the most dangerous batter in baseball. And we saw them do this. Remember, we saw them do this a million times when the Angels were in town last year. And Carlos Santana, like, specifically, has effectively tortured the Jays in basically every uniform he has ever worn. Right, Twins, he's done it. We saw it today. The Mariners, the Pirates, the Royals. He did it when he was in Cleveland to a lesser extent, albeit that was a long time ago. You name it, he has done it. Against the Jays, he must love hitting against Toronto, both home and away. So I am actually surprised you don't just avoid giving him that opportunity, considering that he's also red hot at the dish. He'd homered in on Friday. He homered yesterday, and I know Manoah was pitching well. And again, Santana did not see a single fastball, because I think Manoah did kind of sort of struggle with the fastball today, as opposed to the changeup or the sinker or certainly the slider, which generated a lot of strikes today. But I mean, I believe the pitch he threw to Santana, which he jacked for the 3-run bomb, was a changeup, and it was a couple inches off the zone, outside of the zone, off the plate on the I guess left side of the plate if you're standing behind the plate. So it's not, again, I don't put a lot of the blame on Manoah, because I think if you feel that he is dealing and has the pitch count low, you do that. But then again, you could have also mitigated that with intentionally walking the guy. So I do agree with that. I got to say, having said that, is that a John Schneider decision? Is it? Like, I actually am genuinely asking, because I think a lot of what we have discussed is over the, and not just today, obviously, like in the over the course of the whole season, over the course of the whole last season, is the role that analytics and the front office play in decision-making processes. And I think that's what irks a lot of people, and certainly what irks me, is that you're not really making decisions based on your own intuition. You're sometimes making decisions based on like a spreadsheet. And having said that, I almost feel like the analytics probably would have favored walking Carlos Santana to get to a much weaker batter in Christian Vasquez, especially at this point in his career. Let's go back to the phones. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590. Let's go to Guy in Toronto. Guy, I understand you are still not a fan. I was just talking about analytics in the front office. I understand you are not a huge fan of management.
Exactly. I just want to say Happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out
there.
But
absolutely.
Yeah, you know what? I mean, the problem is the upper management and management. When they're not putting these players in the best position to win, I mean, Schneider's all over the place with his lineup. Guys are playing different positions they've never played before. You can't keep the same guys in the 2, 3, or 4 hole. And when they need to make moves, they don't, i.e. Springer. You know, the fact that this team is, you know, really weak in hitting. Everyone forgets about this pitching. Does anyone realize that we have, what, the third most runs scored against us also? And we have, like, the second worst run differential in the American League? No one talks about the pitching. And that's just to show you how bad the hitting is. We are a terrible baseball team playing in the toughest division in baseball. This season is over. Like, and the only way we're going to see a move in the front office is when all those fans who get to go see the Rogers Center and all these new you know, changes that they've made, and, you know, those fans that, you know, just like to go to a ball game just to watch a ball game and bring their kid, they're still going to go there. But the fans like myself who go to the games because they want to see a competitive team and expect a competitive team, and they want to see the team win, instead of going to these games where the over-under on hits is 4, 4.5 every single game, who wants to watch this product? I mean, guys, this team, they need to pack it in right now. DFA, Springer, make your trades, make your moves, and at least this season, play the guys in the minors who've been rotting in there, doing nothing and just sitting and waiting to get a call-up. I would rather see them utilize this season to see what they got in the minors, and then next year you do what you got to do. But Adkins has to go. He's terrible. Schneider, got to go. I'll hang up and listen. Happy Mother's
Day. Hey, Gee, appreciate the call. Yeah, happy Mother's Day to everyone out there. Okay, look, Springer is not getting DFA'd. That's just not it's not happening, right? It's not going to happen. But should he be batting leadoff? No, I agree. You know, I do wonder about the future of this team, because I think back to when Vladdy and Bo, and I guess Biggio too, to a lesser extent, but I remember when those guys were about to be called up. So when was that? Like 2018? Like this is like around, I guess we can even look back, like 2017, 2018. This is when we're looking back to, okay? It wasn't that long ago, right? 2024, it was like 7 years ago, right? So you're looking back to that stretch of time in the immediate aftermath of the ball club being dismantled after the postseason runs in 15 and 16, right? And I think a lot of people had a lot of hope for what the organization could be when you look at what other organizations are now. Like, I just mean, like, relatively speaking, right? Like, right now you're looking at some of the hotter AL ball clubs even, and you look at the way the Rangers have utilized both their cap space and young guys in the minors, a la Evan Carter and Josh Young, for example, to help bolster big free agent signings like Seager and Semien, for example, right? Certainly the best example of this is the Orioles, who basically drafted everyone, the Hendersons, the Rutschmans, the Cowsers, the Westbergs of the world, to go up there and compete and be very good. And I think there was a thought process at the time back in 2017, 2018, that that's what the Blue Jays would be. And in 2021, it kind of felt like that's where they were going. And, you know, you look at how the paths for these three teams have largely diverged, for example. I'm just using them as examples because I know Jays fans are familiar with the Orioles and the Rangers, but it's tough. Like, it's tough. I don't think, and I've said before, maybe it is time to kind of, like, soft rebuild, but the problem is, like, I'm not sure the guys in the minors right this second are much better than what you're getting right now. Like, certainly Aroldis Martinez, who we already kind of talked about today, that's probably the main person you want to see come up here. But a lot of the Blue Jays' strengths in the minors are either pitching, two of three, actually, I guess all three of them, Barriera, Tiedemann, and Marudis, I believe his name is, all of them are injured, right? And then you got certainly Aroldis Martinez. But after that, I mean, if you were to call up, I don't know, Alan Roden or Damiano Palmigiani, Canadian, by the way, wouldn't mind seeing him. But I'm just saying, like, if you call those guys up, is it really going to make a massive difference with this ball club? Probably not, right? So you look back to those years 7 years ago and you think, man, I'm not sure there is quite the carrot dangling for fans to get excited about. I think the other half of it is the Blue Jays are now what? Let's see here. They're 18 and 22. They're 18 and 21 entering play today. So 18 and 22. You're 4 games under .500. I do genuinely wonder what the breaking point will be, because as some of the texters pointed out, you know, like there's this text from Gus in Surrey who had made the point, hey, Show, if I was to tell you one of these teams' payrolls is $100 million higher than the other, you wouldn't think it's the Blue Jays. Bad roster construction. And, yeah, it's true. I mean, I do wonder how much further they have to go until the dam breaks. The other problem is, of course, is they just always give you these tantalizing glimpses of what they could be, and you have to look no further than yesterday's ball game in order to get that, right? It's crazy. Adam in Richmond Hill texts in, Show, two questions. When does Ross Atkins publicly address his team's struggles? Fan deserves answers. And how does a team with three hitting coach and a quote-unquote offensive coordinator struggle this badly and not make change? You see, to that point, Adam, and I think they're valid questions. It's just when you get 10 runs and 16 hits, I feel like the thought process is, hey, it's working. Trust the process, it's working. And then you get so many more games like today, two hits and one run, and you think, gosh, like, maybe a change should be made. I'm not even sure. Like, I know people are clamoring, by the way, for Ross Atkins, who's not spoken to the media in ages. I don't even remember the last time he spoke to the media. But at the same time, like, what is he going to say? Ross Atkins is famously opaque. This entire front office is. I'm not really sure what he could say beyond, like, accepting responsibility for literally everything, which, honestly, don't think many front offices do, right? So, unfortunately, I don't think there's a very satisfying, gratifying answer in that sense. Let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll go back to the phones. A lot of people on hold. Stay on the line. We'll get you. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. 590-590 is the people's text line. It's open. Still taking your calls and texts. You're listening to Jay's Talk. Jay's 5-1 losers to the Twins here at the Rogers Centre on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
John, Carlos Santana refuses to mend his evil ways. What if you had for if IKF had got the out of first? Would you have considered putting him on?
Maybe, you know, I think would that have loaded the bases? Yeah, that's a tough ask for a pitcher. I think I know Alec only had one walk at that point. I think he hit a 2-0 changeup. So I think you think about it, but. He's done some damage against us for sure. I'd like to see him get the hell out of here.
I mean, you could have also just walked him, and then you wouldn't have had to face Manoah, right? I don't know. Oh, that's John Schneider when asked about walking or not walking, intentionally not walking, Carlos Santana in what ended up a three-run jack for Santana, who gets the best of Alek Manoah. The Blue Jays lose 5-1, the final score. They lose the series as well here at the Rogers Center. Up next, a tough road trip, mini road trip, just the one series to Baltimore to play the Orioles at Camden Yards for the first time this season. Corbin Burns, Jose Berríos in the mound matchup tomorrow. You're listening to Jay's Talk. Show Ali here for another 15-20 minutes or so. So still lots of time to give me your phone calls. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. 590-590, name and location. That's the people's text line. Before we go back to the people's text line, let's go to the phones. Ian calling in from right here in Toronto. Ian, what's on your mind?
Okay, so first of all, for the people who were talking about Manoah not facing Santana, I'm looking up right now. Santana against right-handed pitchers has hit 177 going into today with a 581 slugging. So for all the armchair people there, there is no reason to expect Santana to do that. When Santana was turned around in the playoffs against the Mariners, that was the big mistake that Schneider made at the end of the day. Right now, as it stands, Guillermo Martinez should have been fired the day they were out of the playoffs last year. He's a failure as a hitting coach, and honestly, he should not be on any team. With regards to starting to trade players, eventually you're going to have to look into that. The starters have done all they can. The bullpen, as much as there's only a few people who are getting guys out, the problem still just comes down to hitters can't hit. Guys like Vlad, who ran to arbitration because he needed $20 million, is, and no offense, Vlad is a failure. He is a failure as a player. All the hype, none of the talent, none of the will to win, none of the talent of his dad. He's an 800 OPS first baseman. Springer, I don't know why he's fallen off a cliff. Bo, at least, I'm willing to give him a leash because Bo's been better the last 2 years over Vlad when it comes down to his OPS and his average and everything. But it just comes down to you were building this team with Vlad in mind, and he is not a guy you should have ever been building a team around. He's an 800 OPS one first baseman playing the easiest position, and he's already cost a few games playing the easiest position. He has got to go at the end of the year, at the end of the day. The problem is time to trade him was this past off season, and now you're not going to get anything for him. You can't pay a guy $20 million for 10 extra base hits when Jansen's had 60% less times up and already has more extra base hits than Vlad.
Hey, Ian, thanks for the call, man. Tell me how you really feel. I hear you on Bo getting a longer leash. Springer, I've said this before, but Springer for me is Maybe my expectations were just unreasonably low for Springer, but I don't. I mean, it's not that I don't think it's a problem. It is, obviously, and I'm not sure what you do about it beyond just not batting him leadoff, but the team definitely seems to have some sort of, like, sunk cost fallacy in not running Springer out there atop the lineup, I should say, day after day after day after day. David Schneider is someone I would have liked to see get some more run atop the lineup, but, I mean, I said this yesterday, Springer only got the day off because he was sick, right? And it just seems like they're not willing. And I really don't think it's fair to completely ascribe it to Springer is the one who he's going to be mad if he doesn't get moved out of the leadoff spot. I truly don't think that's the case, but it does feel like the team believes for whatever reason there aren't very many other options there, and we have been shown there are, namely Davis Schneider. So I'm with you on that one. I think I do think calling Vladdy a failure is harsh. Right? I mean, you just said he was an 800 OPS first baseman at a position that is, I agree, a lot easier to play than if he was the third baseman, for example. But, I mean, if you're an 800 OPS player, probably, like, I think by definition you're not a failure, right? Now does that mean he is the superstar that was promised, that's going to be the Ronald Acuna, that's going to be the Bobby Witt Jr., that's going to be the Juan Soto of this franchise? No, that I agree with. That I do agree with, but I'm not going to go so far as to call the guy a failure. I actually think in the last, 10 games? 12 games? I forgot what the cutoff is, but he's been playing actually quite well. And now I think the problem with Vladdy is we've been kind of, like, post-2021, obviously, but we've kind of been fooled somewhat by his production because he's had hot stretches, and then he's, like, tapered off, right? And if you're going to have that, you can't really have that. Like, there is no such thing. I think Blair said this a couple times, but there is no such thing as a slump-proof player. But when the slumps are extended, you can't think you're, like, it does change, whether it's fair or not, your perception of these players. And I think people's perceptions, mine as well, has changed for Vladdy, but I'm not sure I'd go so far as to call him a failure. And I think Barker has said this before. Both Blair and Barker have said this, but the idea that you can, in theory, view Vladdy as an above-average first baseman and not an elite talent. Because elite is where we get kind of caught up, right? Generational talent, elite talent is where we get caught up in terms of evaluating Vladimir Guerrero Jr. I mean, it's also tough when your dad is, like, not just a good baseball player, but it's a Hall of Famer. He's probably not like his dad, but he's also somewhat of a different player than his father as well. It's just, I find evaluating Vladdy is so tough because, again, like, the tantalizing glimpses of what he could be are there. They're there. We're even seeing it more these days. But it's just, do you have faith he'll keep it up? I don't know that I do, but I'm willing to give him a bit of a break, if only because he's starting to pull a little more, or at the very least, he's starting to lift the ball a little more, I should say, and making better contact. Then again, is it too little, too late? Certainly sounds like a lot of people feel that way. Let's go back to the phones. Jeremy and Vaughn joining us here on Jay's Talk. Jeremy, what's on your mind? What do you want to get to today?
Hey, show. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Hey, so listen, I don't know if this is something that Schneider said repeatedly, but I'm pretty sure he has said this, where he basically says that, you know, we only go as far as our top three players.
Right.
And I just don't understand that. I don't think that makes sense because baseball isn't about, you know, your one, two, or three top players. It's a team sport, right? I mean, like, look at, you know, Ohtani and Trout. You know, they never sniffed the playoffs, I'm pretty sure, with those two guys. So I just think that's a false philosophy. And, again, I don't have it on record, but I'm pretty sure he said that multiple times. We only will go as far as our top three guys. So, you know, I just want to see what you think of that, if it holds any truth. And, yeah, thanks again.
Yeah, hey, thanks for the call, man. I appreciate you joining me here on Jays Talk, Jeremy. I think when it comes to the idea that the Jays will only go as far as the top three goes, for me, it's not that it only falls on them. Because you're right, that's a false premise, right? Like, you look at the, I think the Angels of yesteryear, a good example. The Ohtani and Trout doing all-world things on a daily basis. And, you know, like that famous tweet, you know, the Trout goes 3-for-5 with 2 home runs, and Shohei Ohtani hits a grand slam, and the Angels lose 15-3, right? Like, that was the joke of the last couple of years. I don't think that's necessarily what John Schneider was getting at, in the sense of it only falls on them. It's just that you can get as many hits and as much production from the Ernie Clements and the Isaiah Kiner-Falefas and the Davis Schneiders and, you know, Kevin Biggio all you want. But at the end of the day, it will fall on your stars to produce. I mean, you use the example, I think you said Mookie Betts there, right? So if you use the example of the Dodgers, for example, as well, you know, the rest of the Dodgers lineup is great for the most part, but it doesn't fall on like the shoulders of Chris Taylor to get the Dodgers to the World Series, right? It falls on the shoulders of Freddie Freeman and Mookie Betts and Shohei Ohtani and Will Smith, right? So I think that for me, that's how I interpret what John Schneider says. But and I think he's right. Like the truth is you need more from Bo. You need more from Vladimir Guerrero Jr. You need more from George Springer. And I am convinced you will get more from Bo and Vladdy, and I think we are seeing it more consistently now. And they're 4 games under .500. It's not early anymore. It's certainly not so early that you can't draw conclusions from what you've seen over the first like 40 games of the season. But at the same time, I think there is a runway for them to turn things around. I actually think that plays into what a lot of people are talking about when it comes to the ball club, right? Like when it comes to the roster construction, because if they're 4 games under .500, but they show the glimpses of a 10-8 comeback win and Vladdy is starting to turn things around with the underlying statistics, which I know everyone hates and calls like the cacification of baseball, essentially. And the same goes for Bo. He's not going to hit under 200 all year and all these different things. I feel like that actually like spurs the front office on to not make change. And that's probably a problem, right? Don't get me wrong. Like if they miss the playoffs this year by multiple games and they're under .500 at the All-Star break and you're losing games to the White Sox with these 6 games coming up and that's where we're at the end of May. But yeah, All-Star break be damned. That's in July. By the end of May, you're like 10 games under .500 if that's the case. They're probably will make changes. They like I put it this way. They probably have to make changes. I actually said this when I do some Sportsnet Tonights on the network here in Toronto. And obviously, I know not everyone's a Leafs fan, so I'll be brief with this. But, I said for the Toronto Maple Leafs, the easiest domino to fall because of how the roster is constructed is firing Sheldon Keefe. And then they went out and they fired Sheldon Keefe. And obviously that was at the end of the season after yet another first-round series loss. But, I mean, the easiest domino to fall all the time, coaches and managers are hired to be fired, will be firing John Schneider. I'm not sure that is going to be the thing that gets you over here. It might take a complete overhaul. If that's what you believe the team needs, right? I wanted to read this text from Michael in Oakville, 590-590, name and location. Michael saying, "Hey, show, I disagree about you calling up a Martinez or Horwitz. You can make the argument that David Schneider's call up last August was what got the team into the postseason last year." I will hear that argument, Michael. I'm here for that. Obviously, he goes on to say, obviously not every hot hitter in the minors will come up and have that impact, as we recently saw with Barger. But if what you have up here isn't working, shouldn't you try? Of course, the call-up has to be earned, but I think Aurelvis and Spencer has. I would absolutely call up Spencer Horwitz. Just to be clear, maybe I wasn't clear on that. Spencer Horwitz is the guy I would call up. He's actually the first guy I would call up. We already got to see Addison Barger, and I'm glad we saw it. I'm glad he got his first hit after struggling for a little while there. But the guy I would call up is Spencer Horwitz, if only to fill the Vogelbach role, right? Because Spencer Horwitz is, like I said, a quad A guy. He's a little older. He wouldn't necessarily have to play literally every single day in order for you to get some value out of him. It's just for Aurelvis Martinez, I want to say, without looking it up, I think he's 22 or 23 years old. He's in that range. So if he's in that range, right, and he's not going to play every single day, then I'm not sure I see the point unless the Blue Jays are going out there and trading away guys. And the other half of why I think Aurelvis might just need a little more seasoning in the minors is because he has committed a buttload of errors. Like, way more. There was actually a point where I think he had committed more errors than he'd hit home runs. And he's hit 10 home runs. Well, 10 home runs, the 10th home run coming today. So 9 home runs prior to today. And he had missed some time after he got hit by a pitch, I think in the kneecap or something. So I'm glad to see him back healthy, but you want him to work on that, because if one guy isn't going to be the guy that changes things, then you probably need him to have sound, at least defensive mechanics, right? Let's go back to the phones. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Jeff, out in BC in Maple Ridge, calling Jay's Talk. What's on your mind, Jeff?
Yeah, I appreciate the call. Like the show. I just want to almost reiterate what the previous callers are saying. I think there's a common theme happening here. This all started for me last year with us not being able to cash in runs, and we desperately needed a hitter, of which management did not do anything to get us that hitter. And then Berrios, the Berrios in the wild card game, you know, pulling him there with Schneider's. You know, we're kind of pointing the finger at Schneider's. The off season comes along and we get tantalized with the Ohtani. We're in on Ohtani. Okay, well, if we're in on Ohtani, did we not have a plan B or at least you tell that we're in on Ohtani and we've got nothing? We've got no other resources for no other player that fits the many voids that the Jays need this year. So that's kind of one point that I'm pointing towards management, and not necessarily Schneider, but upper management.
Right.
Schneider this year has, in my opinion, he's almost managing himself out of a gig. The mistakes that we make are just so fundamental. I'll repeat very briefly that pitching to Manoah. He's having a great game. He's having a great game. Everything you wanted. Wouldn't you want mentally to leave that game on a high? You know, sure. What? Walk that batter. You got behind. Walk the batter. You know what? Yes, we've got to replace him. But you've had such a great outing up until that point. And I think that was a great opportunity for Schneider, which, again, he did not manage. Our hitting, I think we're being very immature. I've never liked our hitting coach. I know analytics tell us that our hitting coach could be the guy, but the guy's never, you know, never played in the big leagues, never even had a good batting average in the minors, yet he's our batting coach, of which we can't get right. If the Blue Jays could only score their runs first and second or second and third with one out or nobody out, and we can never cash them in. And final point, and then I'll listen in, show, is we win one out of four games. If I see that Gatorade come out again, so we dump that post-game interview and we win one out of four or two out of five, I'm going to lose my mind. And again, that points to management of why are we letting our players, you know, celebrate failure in our eyes. So I appreciate you giving me my time, letting me vent. Very therapeutic. Thank you. But I'll listen to your comments. Thanks.
Hey, Jeff, thanks again, man. Hey, that's kind of what Jay Sock is supposed to be for, right? For people to vent, whether or not I always agree. Look, the hitting coaches, I think when they struggle, they're always going to bear some responsibility, right? Like, I think that's just the reality. Like, that's the reality. Like, it's a results-oriented business. And if the results stop coming, and, I mean, Guillermo Martinez presided over the offense in 2021 and 2022 when the offense was pretty good, all things considered, and he's also presided over the offense in 2023 and 2024 when it has been, let's face it, abysmal. So he's got, as much as you get credit for it being okay, he gets the blame, I suppose, when it's not going so well. Same goes for Don Mattingly, and we kind of thought Matt Haig might have a bigger role to play as well, and he probably wears some of it also. It's just I can get behind the criticism for them. It's just I'm not really sure. Maybe there are too many cooks in the kitchen. You know what I mean? Because again, Don Mattingly, he's like this great hitter that we know from when he was a player with the Yankees and all these accolades he's gotten. But I mean, if he hasn't been able to translate that, and again, you're not asking him to make every player into Don Mattingly of the 1990s. But at the same time, you want to see some steps taken in a forward positive fashion. And again, but at the same time, like the players have got to swing the bats. Like they're the ones holding the bat in their hands and having to actually go out and get positive results. And you know what? They haven't done that. So, I mean, the hitting coaches for sure have to wear it. They do. But the players got to wear it too, right? I wanted to read a couple more texts before we go. I see here Jason in Nova Scotia. Nobody's buying it, dude. Guerrero sucks. I disagree, Jason. Don't know what else you want me to say. I don't think he sucks. Is he a superstar? I don't think he is. But does that mean he sucks? Like, there's a lot of wiggle room between sucks and superstar, right? That's a fact, right? I can't get on board with sucks. But is he the guy you should build a team around? Maybe not. And I think that's okay to acknowledge here. I see here is Varsha the Chapman of last year, Mike in Victoria. I think he's still turning it around a little, but he had a hot stretch when they were playing the Padres and stuff a couple weeks ago. But, you know, still some time for things to turn around. Look, appreciate all the text, guys. You guys are really passionate. Jays fans are undefeated. But, hey, like Blair always says, the best thing about baseball is that you get to do it all over again tomorrow. Corbin Burns, Jose Berríos on the mound. Appreciate you being with us on Blue Jays Baseball, brought to you by your local family-owned Crown Rust Control Centers in Hanwell and Woodstock, New Brunswick. Protect your vehicle from rust today. Your local family-owned Crown at crown.com, Canada's number one rust protection. For Ben Shulman, Chris LaRue, Tom Young, Nick Blackmore, Andrew Adams, I'm Sho Ali. Happy Mother's Day to everyone. Want to shout out my mom, Zarina, Ben's mom, Sarah, Chris LaRue's mom, Marion. All of you do amazing stuff for all of us. We appreciate you. I hope you have a wonderful day. I'm back next weekend. We'll talk to you later.